I'm Catherine Hadro, tonight on EWTN News Nightly. A busy few days at the Vatican for newly elected Pope Leo XIV. We'll catch you up on the latest. Health policy. President Trump targets prescription drug makers and calls on them to lower their costs. Hear what he had to say. Coming home. Hamas releases the last known living American hostage in captivity. Plus, instruments of peace. An unusual jubilee event at the Vatican. We'll explain these stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us. Our top story tonight, full steam ahead. Pope Leo XIV has hit the ground running in his first few days. From speaking to cardinals to greeting the faithful, singing the Regina Caeli, and visiting the tombs of his predecessors, the Holy Father has not stopped. Today, he held an audience with media professionals, including members of the EWTN team, calling them to serve truth and disarm words. EWTN Vatican journalist Valentina De Donato has more.
In his first formal address to the College of Cardinals following his election, the Holy Father revealed the inspiration behind the name he chose, Leo XIV. The choice, a reference to Pope Leo XIII and his historic 1891 encyclical, Rerum Novarum, which addressed the social questions in the face of the first great industrial revolution. The Pope says the world is living through another revolution today, a digital revolution that poses new threats to the human person and human civilization.
In our own day, the Church offers to everyone the treasury of her social teaching in response to another industrial revolution and to developments in the field of artificial intelligence that pose new challenges for the defense of human dignity, justice, and labor.
Pope Leo XIV made his first journey outside the Vatican to visit the Shrine of the Mother of Good Counsel in Genazzano, which has been run by the Augustinians since 1200. There, he prayed before the ancient image of the Virgin Mary, and with those present, he recited John Paul II's prayer to the Mother of Good Counsel. Later that day, he visited the Basilica of St. Mary Major in Rome to pray at the tomb of Pope Francis and before the icon of Mary, Salus Populi Romani. On Sunday morning, the Holy Father celebrated Mass in the Vatican grottoes at the altar near the tomb of St. Peter, together with Father Alejandro Moral Anton, the prior general of the Order of St. Augustine, carrying Pope St. John Paul II's cross. Then he spent time in silent prayer at the tombs of his predecessors. And at midday, Pope Leo XIV delivered his first Regina Caeli address from the central loggia of St. Peter's Basilica to an estimated 100,000 pilgrims.
Regina Caeli, laetare, alleluia.
He began by calling for prayers for vocations to the priesthood and consecrated life, addressing the youth with the same words Pope St. John Paul II uttered on the same loggia 27 years earlier. Do not be afraid.
Non abbiate paura.
Do not be afraid. Accept the invitation of the Church and of Christ the Lord.
The Holy Father also issued an appeal for an end to the conflicts in Ukraine, Gaza, and on the India-Pakistan border, echoing the plea for the miracle of peace, saying, never again war.
But how many other conflicts there are in the world. I entrust this heartfelt appeal to the Queen of Peace, so she may present it to the Lord Jesus to obtain for us the miracle of peace.
And on Monday morning, the Pope met with journalists from around the globe, reminding them that they are an essential part of promoting and protecting human dignity in line with the Church's social teaching. He reiterated the Church's solidarity with journalists who are imprisoned for seeking and reporting the truth.
The Church recognizes in these witnesses, I'm thinking of those who report on war even at the cost of their lives, the courage of those who defend dignity, justice, and the right of people to be informed, because only informed individuals can make free choices.
The newly elected Holy Father now begins his first full week as head of the Church. This week, he will meet with diplomats accredited to the Holy See as preparations continue for the solemn mass for the inauguration of the pontificate on Sunday. In Rome, Valentina Di Donato for EWTN News Nightly.
And joining us now is Francis Rooney, former U.S. ambassador to the Holy See. Ambassador Rooney, good to see you. When you look at these last few days for the church and for the world, how do you feel about the election of Pope Leo XIV? What are your thoughts on this historic time?
Well, I'm obviously pretty excited, as is my entire family. Never thought we'd know a pope. Now we know one quite well for many years. And I'm really confident he's going to be a fantastic pope. He can communicate with people in a very clear but non-threatening way. People will hear his message, and he will inspire people.
Mm. For those of us who have never met the Pope, can you tell us about him? What kind of personality does he have? What have your meetings been like?
Well, he's got a great sense of humor. He's self-deprecating. He's not, you know, complicated, but he's super smart, and he communicates super clearly. And he was he used to come down to the board meetings of the high school that our children attended, the Augustinian one, and I was on the board. He was always very insightful in his comments. And then when he became head of all the Augustinians was when we moved to Rome for the ambassador job, and we saw an awful lot of him there. He did a great job running the order. You know, the Augustinian order hasn't had many of the problems that some other orders have had, because I think I attribute it to good management, like Father Bob.
It's fascinating because you have this personal perspective, but you also have a diplomatic lens as well. What kind of relationship do you see the first American pope having with the United States?
Well, I think it'll be very powerful. I mean, the fact that we have an American pope who can inspire young people, inspire our Hispanic community, should generate more Catholics. And I think that's really good. Also, I think that it ends this Europe versus U.S. thing, which is good for both sides. And hopefully he can be a bridge builder between Europe, Asia, Latin America, as well as the United States.
Are there any particular issues you really see Pope Leo collaborating with the U.S. on?
Well, I think that we share a lot of common values. I worked very closely with Pope Benedict when I was ambassador. And we have so many, you know, we're the only two nations, if you will, that have human rights and human dignity in our foreign policy statement of purpose. And I think those two things need to be at the top of the agenda right now.
You mentioned that, you know, his election, maybe that'll stir up fallen away Catholics. What impact in our final minute together, Ambassador, do you think the election of Pope Leo XIV will have on American Catholics?
Well, I think it will stimulate people to be more active in the church and maybe some to come back and maybe some to join up. I mean, you know, you got a guy that spent a lot of time in Peru, fluent Spanish and Portuguese speaker. That's got to enthuse some of our Latin Catholic community, a lot of whom have become Protestants. Maybe we'll get them back. Certainly young people that Pope Francis helped enthuse. I think that Pope Leo will continue to enthuse young people to consider participation in the church.
Well, we are so grateful to share your voice in our program. Ambassador Rooney, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
In the midst of the Pope's busy schedule over the last few days, he had the papal apartment in the Apostolic Palace reopened. The ceremony took place yesterday after the Regina Caeli prayer. Along with several Vatican officials, Pope Leo oversaw the removal of the seals that had closed the papal apartment in the Apostolic Palace following the death of Pope Francis. The sealing officially marked the end of Pope Francis's papal authority. Today, the Vatican revealed the Pope and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky have spoken on the phone. This followed the pontiff's plea for peace in the country. Zelensky later posted on X about the conversation, saying he thanked the Pope for his prayers for a just and lasting peace in Ukraine. Zelensky is asking Russian President Vladimir Putin to meet him personally in Turkey on Thursday. President Trump says he's optimistic the war could be drawing to a close.
It is taking place, and I think you may have a good result out of the Thursday meeting in Turkey between Russia and Ukraine. And I believe the two leaders were going to be there. I was thinking about flying over. I don't know where I'm going to be on Thursday. I've got so many meetings, but I was thinking about actually flying over there. There's a possibility of it, I guess, if I think things can happen.
Zelensky says he would welcome the U.S.-backed push for a ceasefire. This comes after Ukraine and European allies demanded Russia accept an unconditional 30-day ceasefire. Putin suggested in-person negotiations instead. President Trump says his administration helped orchestrate a ceasefire between India and Pakistan. India's prime minister says the country has only paused military action and will retaliate on its own terms if there is any future terror attack. This after a Catholic school and convent came under shelling from Pakistan military forces last week. Meanwhile, Pope Leo XIV praised the peace between the nations, hoping for a lasting arrangement. Hamas says it has released an American Israeli hostage in a goodwill gesture toward President Donald Trump. Idan Alexander had been held in the Gaza Strip for more than 19 months. The release of the soldier would be the first since Israel ended a ceasefire with Hamas in March. Israel also is in its third month of blocking all humanitarian aid from entering Gaza, prompting concerns of the risk of famine if the blockade is not lifted soon. For analysis, we turn now to Gaith Al-Omari, a Middle East expert and senior fellow at the Washington Institute. Gaith, great to have you back. First off, your reaction to the release of Idan Alexander and the timing of it. What does this signal?
First of all, thank you, Catherine. Look, on a human level, obviously, this was a great occasion. Any chance to get anyone out of that hell that is being a captive under Gaza, under Hamas, is welcome. But the timing is very significant. I think it's notable that it was only one hostage, who's an American, released based on American efforts to coincide with the president's trip to the Middle East. Mm. It's a message to the Middle East, first of all, that America first means America first. The U.S. will prioritize U.S. interests, and it's also a message to Israel. The U.S. will do what the U.S. needs to do for its interests. If it works with Israel, great. If it works without informing Israel, also great. So I think this is politically, diplomatically very significant.
As we mentioned in our report, since March, Israel has blocked humanitarian aid from entering Gaza. Is the release of an Israeli-American hostage enough to lift that blockade?
Actually, we will see, but this happened in parallel with another effort. A few days ago, the administration announced the creation of a new Gaza humanitarian fund. The whole objective of this is to allow for the movement of aid. The Israelis have been involved in this, but also it has been very clear from the administration. I think the president himself said it. The humanitarian situation is untenable, and the U.S. cannot allow it to continue. But I think what the release today of Idan Alexander did is create new momentum. We see Israeli negotiators going to Qatar tomorrow to resume the negotiations. So I think this is injecting energy along with the president's visit. I think we have a shot again at having a ceasefire and the release of hostages.
So I want to follow up on that, Gaith. What about the renewed push for a ceasefire between Israel and Hamas? Could the move today help to put a new pause in the fighting? What do you think?
Again, hard to tell. I think there is a lot of pressure, a lot of energy being put. But on the other hand, the positions of Israel and Hamas continue to be irreconcilable. Hamas wants a definite end to the war that keeps it in power, while Israel is saying we're not going to accept a situation where Hamas remains in power. How you can square that circle, I don't know. But what I do know is that right now there is a lot of pressure. This is going to come up in the president's meeting in Saudi Arabia next couple of days when he goes to Qatar towards the end of the week. If there is a chance to a deal, I see it now, but it's going to be very, very complicated. Mm.
What else are you expecting from President Trump and his visit to the Middle East this week?
I think we're going to be seeing a focus on wins for the U.S. Through bilateral deals, be it trade deals, economic investments. I think the Emiratis already pledged $1.4 trillion over 10 years. The Saudis, $600 billion, and they will pledge more. But also we might see, and this is very interesting, a nod towards allowing Saudi Arabia to create its own peaceful civilian nuclear program. This is a big deal because in the past it has been pegged to having Israeli-Saudi normalization. Now it seems to be willing to move forward. But I would be reading between the lines to see if there is any progress being done on relaunching talks towards Saudi-Israeli normalization. This will be transformative for the region. The president wants it. It builds on his Abraham Accords that he did in his first term. But there are many demands there. But I think the president will be listening very attentively to hear if the Saudis are willing to move along. And if they do, then I suspect the president will be all in.
Well, it's a significant day today, and we're grateful to have your voice. Gaith Alamari, thank you.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
President Donald Trump holds a wide-ranging press conference in the West Wing before leaving on an extended trip overseas. The president mainly wanted to address his plan to cut prescription drug prices. He also touched on other key topics like tariffs.
President Donald Trump enters the White House Roosevelt Room to address reporters. He says he wants to slash the price of prescription drugs in the United States.
The rest of the world's going to have to pay a little bit more, and America's going to pay a lot less.
The president argues it's unfair for people in the U.S. to pay more than in other countries.
Whoever is paying the lowest price, we will look at that price and we will say that's the price we're going to pay.
The president then signed the executive order setting a 30-day deadline for drug makers to lower their prices or face new limits over what the government will pay. The impact on private health insurance is not yet clear. But we did see the stock market jump this morning after the U.S. Treasury Secretary confirmed lower tariffs on China.
We want more balanced trade, and I think that both sides are committed to achieving that.
President Trump says the relationship with China is good, and he might speak with Chinese President Xi at the end of the week.
I think it's going to be fantastic for China. I think it's going to be fantastic for us, and I think it's going to be great for unification and peace.
The president now beginning a trip to Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and the United Arab Emirates. While overseas, he plans to accept a controversial multi-million dollar gift on behalf of the U.S., a jumbo jet that could be used as Air Force One.
So I think it's a great gesture from Qatar. I appreciate it very much. I would never be one to turn down that kind of an offer. I mean, I could be a stupid person and say, no, we don't want a free, very expensive airplane.
We have a lot more still to come on EWTN News Nightly, including coming to an agreement. A big week on Capitol Hill as congressional Republicans look to pass key parts of President Trump's agenda. Another huge week for House Republicans in their quest to pass a reconciliation package with President Trump's domestic priorities. Several key committees that oversee taxes and Medicaid spending are taking a look at the proposals. Let's check in now with Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales with the latest. Eric?
Well, good evening, Catherine. It's going to be a very big week for the so-called Big Beautiful Bill as it continues to make its way through committees. Tomorrow, it's going to be dissected by the Ways and Means Committee, and then later in the week, the Energy and Commerce, along with the Agricultural Committees, are going to take a look at it. In the latest Energy and Commerce Committee draft, significant changes to Medicaid could be passed, including new workforce requirements and more frequent eligibility checks on beneficiaries. Republicans continue to say it's about preventing waste, fraud, and abuse, but not cutting benefits to qualified people.
You got to find it in Medicaid, and it's not cuts, it's redoing something that realigning the language of who qualifies and who doesn't.
Republican senators are watching the legislative maneuvering by their House counterparts to avoid the threat of a filibuster. Anything the House produces will need to be revised to meet the Senate's reconciliation rules, but most agree there is a lot of waste to eliminate.
There's a lot of waste, fraud, and abuse in the Medicaid system that we ought to be rooting out to make it more viable for the people who need it most, pregnant moms, individuals with disabilities, and I think that's our focus. So we're not talking about any kind of benefit reductions.
A partial text of the Ways and Means Committee tax proposal released last week makes permanent the individual income tax rates, which are due to expire at the end of the year. It would also extend and temporarily boost far-reaching tax benefits like the child tax credit. But so far, the version does not address President Trump's biggest tax priorities. The House Republican-approved budget allows for $4.5 trillion in tax cuts, contingent on the GOP being able to find $2 trillion in spending cuts now. Democrats say there's no way to make that much in cuts without impacting benefits for the most vulnerable.
Don't try to do something all on your own that takes health care away from folks to give tax cuts to Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos. That's not good.
The cost of child care is unaffordable for every family. And if you take away Head Start and child care grants, it makes it more unaffordable.
And just moments ago, House Republicans released the full text of their tax bill. The 389-page package includes 2017 tax cuts to make them permanent and includes President Trump's new campaign priorities, such as no tax on tips, overtime, or even car loan interest. It also includes increase on credit amounts for adoptions and child care and more deductions for seniors. Just a reminder, the House only has 8 legislative days left before the Memorial Day recess. That's the deadline when Speaker Johnson wanted to have the reconciliation bill passed by the House. I'll have more on the details of this latest tax bill and the full reconciliation bill being worked on in the Ways and Means Committee tomorrow on EWTN News Nightly. Catherine, back to you in the studio.
Thank you, Eric. And up next on EWTN News Nightly, new numbers. A poll reveals whether U.S. adults approve of how President Trump is handling transgender issues. Plus, March Madness, an event at the Vatican that hits the right notes. Pro-life groups are stepping up their campaign to defund big abortion as the reconciliation bill comes up for debate on Capitol Hill. Digital billboards lit up Times Square a few days ago with the message to defund Planned Parenthood. This after the Trump administration announced its plan to defund the abortion giant. Pro-life leaders have been working with lawmakers, hoping the reconciliation bill will withdraw federal dollars from the organization by Memorial Day. And finally tonight, a new poll finds that about half of U.S. adults approve of how President Trump is handling transgender issues. Overall, 52% of Americans approve of Trump's handling of transgender issues, while 46% disapprove. This while 46% support banning so-called gender-affirming care, while 32% do not. And lastly, 68% of Americans believe gender is assigned at birth, 31% do not. We thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Catherine Hadro. We leave you now with some of the sights and sounds from the Vatican Jubilee for marching bands. Good night, and God bless.